Okay, welcome to the session on Internet Resource Certification. The questions we're going to look at are around how you know that the routes people are sending you are valid. If I'm speaking BGP with somebody and they send me a route, how do I know that they're allowed to? And there are many levels to this question. How do I know I'm speaking to the people I thought I was speaking to? How do I know that they're allowed to announce this route? How do we know that all the other ISPs in between are authorized to announce it to me? I allocated the space to the RIR. How do we know that the RIR allocated it to an LIR? How do we know that the LIR assigned it to an end user? I don't have answers to all these questions, but Randy's going to try to answer some of them, or at least give you some ideas towards answering them. And then after that, Gerard Ross from APNIC is going to talk about some experience that they've had trying to implement some of the cryptographic things which we'll be hearing about. Then at the end, I'd like to hear from the community whether they think AfriNIC should be exploring this kind of problem. Thanks. Over to you, Randy.
Hi. I'm still Randy, no relation, Bush from IIJ. And how many people know what public key, private key means? Okay. There's a form of cryptography where the key, you may know of simple cryptography where I can encrypt something by transforming it and then using the same key to transform it back the other way. There's a subsection of cryptography called public key cryptography where the key to decode it is not the same as the key to encode it, and it is exceedingly difficult to infer one from the other. And so the one used to encode it is known as the private key, and so you can give away the key to decrypt it, and only you could have sent it. So that's, and there's a public key infrastructure under that, and I want to talk a bit about it. The root problem, as Alan described, another way of looking at it is the quality of the Whois data we have, especially in, well, the worst is right, but also Aaron's not so great, APNIC's not so great, etc., is unknown. I'm trying to be polite. I know it's unusual for me, but we'll use the word unknown. It is kind of known, and it's not very good. The same thing's true of the routing registry data. They're pretty weak. But as Alan said, there is no formal means, I stress the word formal, of verifying if a new customer legitimately holds IP address block that they're asking me to announce. In other words, they come to you and they say, I have this /24, please announce it for me. How can you formally find whether they own that or not? Similarly, what I hear from another ISP is a routing announcement. How do I have faith that they have the right to announce that? So what we'd like is to be able to verify that a customer has been allocated a resource they're asking an ISP to announce. In the manual sense, they come to me and they say, announce it. How can I just manually check? No fancy automation, no, how can I really know if considering that the Whois data are unreliable? How can I verify the origin of announcements when debugging? Again, just manually in day-to-day operations today. When somebody calls up and says, they've hijacked my prefix, how do I know who has the right to announce that prefix? Okay? How do I verify routing registry data if I'm generating route filters automatically via program? Wouldn't it be nice to be able to formally verify those? And again, lastly, how do I formally verify the BGP announcements that I hear dynamically, secure routing. That's 3 years, 5 years off, but we want to be on the path for that. And the whole idea here is for registries to start now formally certifying the data so that when the router technology, et cetera, are there, that we'll be ready. So the routing security gap is the infrastructure, the public key infrastructure, the certificates, creating, storing, moving, and validating them. Okay, the certificates that say you have that address space. And I'll go into them in a minute. The kinds of certificates we're talking about is the certificate that says what's the RIRs, what's APNIC's public key and private key. So if APNIC signs something, I can use its public key to say, yep, only APNIC could have signed that. Similarly for an ISP, similarly for an end user. And then there are IP resource certificates. So this address block has been given. Okay, similarly AS numbers. And then there's the right to route, that this IP address can be routed by this ASN. More detail coming. Much more than you want. Two kinds of applications for this stuff. One is resource ownership, ASNs and IP space. But while we've got this certificate, while AFRINIC has issued you the certificate saying this is, you know, the identity of your ISP, you might as well use it for formal certification of valid of financial and business transactions. You might as well use it formally so that the person in your organization responsible for billing has the billing certificate and can hand it to AFRINIC and say something about the bill. I don't know what you say about bills. I'm not allowed to touch money. Now, those of us who are involved in more than one RIR's region, the big ISPs, okay, want this to operate across RIRs. I go nuts with what's my identity at APNIC, what's my identity at RIPE, what's my identity at ARIN. I'm not in the African region at the moment. So all allocations, we should be able to handle normal, experimental, legacy allocations and resources received from multiple RIRs across the RIRs. So I should be able to say that an AS number allocated by AFRINIC is certified to route an address block allocated by RIPE if I have rights to both of them. Okay, this is kind of the kludge. Think of this public key infrastructure database, and the RIRs put in allocations. They certify the allocations, they put them in the database, and they exchange the certificate of the ISP that says, this is your public key and private key. And the ISP does something similarly to a downstream ISP, and the downstream ISP does something similarly to an end site. And it would be nice 3-5 years from now when routing is secured by these formal cryptographic methods that the copies of these data can be right next to the routers so you don't have to rely on routing to get the data to get reliable routing. A little bootstrap problem there. Okay. So what are we talking about? Let's just talk about the resource certificates for address space and AS numbers. They specify an identity, a name, and the public key of the recipient. Alan gets address space X, this block, etc. It specifies the block, and it's signed by the allocator's private key. In other words, it's signed by AFRINIC's private key given to Alan. And I can know that that is real because Afrinic's public key is the only thing that can check that signature. Okay? Luckily, addresses and AS numbers follow an allocation hierarchy. So this is a natural hierarchy, RIR to ISP, to downstream, and or eventually to an end user. So how it really works is some address space, in this case 192.168, the whole 16, is allocated to an ISP, and it's this allocation is signed by the private key of the RIR, so that anybody can check that indeed ISP has been allocated that space, formally and cryptographically. The ISP allocates it to a downstream by saying, oh, take a /17 of it, give it to downstream, and signing it with the ISP's private key. And further down the hierarchy, the downstream can allocate a /24 to a user. And this is all formally verifiable cryptographically because the public keys of the RIR, the ISP, the downstream, and the user are in the public key database. Public certificate database, it should be called, but PKI is a magic phrase. The RIR, the ISPs and the N-sites have identity certs, and the RIRs give you a certificate. When you come to the RIR and you say, Alain, here's my $1,200, and here's my signature, etc., and they issue you a certificate. It's not a piece of paper, of course. It's a bag of bits. Okay, then this all probably happens through a website. Okay, you don't. This will all be shielded from you by reasonable, human interfaces. You're not going to actually have to do this unless you're a giant ISP which is prepared to control all this yourself. Okay, it needs only to be reproducible. In other words, you only need to be able to encode things with the private key and give people your public key because they're not formal identities. They're, IDL is not certifying that I am Randy. He's just certifying that there's a contract between Afrinic and some arbitrary entity that holds this private key. Okay? So it's only used in business transactions with the RIR and to create allocations. It could be based on an external key to get the keys. Makes no difference. But what's nice is ISPs could use an ARIN identity for an APNIC or an AFRINIC allocation or business transaction because the database is shared. RIR identities are very like that. They're five RIR identities, their five public keys, are the root anchors of this whole system. They have to be distributed to everybody, okay? And they can get these certificates anyway, makes no difference, but most likely they'll be self-signed, okay? And the hard issues of this are going to be key rollover. What happens if somebody gets the private key of Afrinic? And then a new one's going to have, so there's going to have to be a process of issuing the keys and all of us knowing them. So underlying the certificate architecture, we wanted one open implementation to be able to use by all RIRs because this is, I don't want to say tricky, but this is very delicate software because it's security and cryptography. You want good assurance that it is correct, that there are no trapdoors on your front end. So it has to hook to the RIR's database backend, which are all different, and it has to hook to different web pages, et cetera, ways of dealing with their business model and their processes. But the cryptography, the certificate management, and the database infrastructure, we want only one copy of everywhere. Okay, because I want that's the layer at which I'm going to move between RIRs. So we want ISPs and N-sites to build their own processes on top of the base tool set also. so that I can hook it into my routing. I can hook it into my router configuration building. I could hook it into my network operation center practices. It's kind of going to look like this. There's going to be the distributed actual storage. There will be the database management toolkit that deals with all the certificates. And there's going to be an application program interface, which RIRs can build their tool set for web or programmatic interfaces, which ISPs can build their own tool sets on top of, end users, public query tools, the CIA wanting to know where you are. Everybody can build their own tools on top of the same formal data infrastructure because there's one common interface. We want this management interface, this API, to work across all our IRs. It describes the interfaces and the transactions for creating, publishing, validating certificates, etc., but it doesn't specify the interface that you deal with, because the different registries will do things different ways, the different ISPs will do things different ways. Okay? And what's interesting is, since the database itself is nothing but a collection of certificates, and the certificates are in a hierarchy descending from the five RIR's trusted keys, there is no need to secure the database because it is self-validating. So you can take copies on it in CD-ROM and throw them in the air. Somebody gives you a bad one, you will know, because it's all certificates all the way down. So there is no need for transport security. So the RIRs want to create AS number and IP space certificates. They wish to issue allocations to ISPs and insights. They want to identify ISPs when they form a business relationship with them. And, of course, they wish to manage their own certificates. ISPs want to get their identity from the RIRs or from their upstream ISP. They want to generate requests upstream for allocations. They want to create certificates for downstream allocations to end users or ISPs who are their downstreams. And they want to generate and manage the certs with which they do business to the RIRs. And they want to validate certificates of others. That's back to knowing that Alan has the right to route that IP address space. Currently, APNIC has a trial implementation. Gerard will talk next and play a movie of Jeff Houston presenting that. That trial implementation has taught us a lot about this stuff. It's much more oriented just to web use and just within APNIC. Okay? So APNIC and others have converged on a multi-RIR and ISP user viewpoint requirements. We've spent the last couple of months all coming to agreement on what we'd all like. APNIC and RIPE are finalizing the first API model, and they have started the work on producing the code at APNIC and RIPE. The result will be open source. So as soon as this specification is tightly nailed down, RIRs, LIRs, whoever wants to start playing with this stuff as it comes out towards the end of the year can start working on their code if you want to work on early versions. In the long run, as I said, what I really care about is BGP routing security. I want to know that, you know, when Alan's AS announces Phillips prefix, that I can formally show that Phillips owns that prefix, that Alan has really been allocated that prefix by the ASN, by the RIR, and that Philip, who owns the prefix, has said Alan is the AS that should originate it. I also want to know that when Alan passes that prefix to Yorty, therefore it must be a V6 prefix, of course, and Yorty passes it to me, that Alan meant for Yorty to pass that, gave Yorty the right to further pass on that prefix. So it's not just the origin I'm interested in, it's the whole path. So the protocols, specifications that are being proposed, the designs that are being proposed are things like SBGP, SOBGP, et cetera, to do that dynamically in the routers. So the routers will be able to eventually use formal cryptographic proof of verification all the way back to the RIRs that people have right to route those things the way they are, and people have the right to pass on those things on AS paths. Okay? I happen to be biased towards SBGP, but that's a story for another day. Just want to thank Jeff George and APNIC for doing the major body of the work so far. Somebody has to pay me to eat, and they also support my routing research work. Questions?
Sorry. My name is Alan Levine. I'm from Cape Town, South Africa, where the big mountain is. And I suspect that the proprietary network kind of providers, such as Novell and the old historic ones, would have used this type of potential vulnerability in TCP/IP or just BGP as an example of why proprietary networking is better than internet working.
Except theirs were just as bad.
Yeah. Well, that's a different story. You probably didn't know how theirs worked, and that's why you couldn't prove that theirs were bad. The question is how relevant is this in Africa, and how relevant is it to Africa? What kinds of vulnerabilities are we seeing in routing in the African environment, and are there other short-stop solutions that we could put into place before this, or is it worthwhile going directly into PKI for routing, security routing?
A couple things at a time. One is, I've yet to have any question of what to do in the interim, is you should go to the talks on using the internet routing registries to build route filters is the best first path. You should also start trying to clean up the WHOIS data, and AFRINIC probably has better data than most because it has a fresh start, but I really don't know. Haven't seen analysis of it. The data at ARIN and RIPE and APNIC have been looked at extensively. There are essentially two classes of data. One are those data created by the registry. In other words, they're the allocations that the registries issue. And those aren't too bad, although RIPE has major inconsistencies in those data. Then there's the data that the object maintainers issuing sub-allocations, the ISPs saying where they've given away the address space, and that stuff's just wild and woolly everywhere. I suspect people are storing wares in WHOIS. It's just not something you want to tell your mom about. Adiel, you were next, I think.
It's a more operational question.
Adiel?
Adiel. It's about the question. What does the certification, the resource certification, mean at operational point of view for an ISP in our region? That means what do they have to start looking at or planning for when such a thing will be in place?
I think AFRINIC, certainly, as you'll see, I don't remember which of Jeff's talks that Gerard will play.
Montreal. Another city.
But they put a very nice web interface over it all. And it's all very easy and painless. To say, who owns it? And it will go up the chain of certificates, say, yep, that came from AFRINIC to Alan. Alan gave it to my residential address, Table Mountain in Cape Town, Alan, and so forth. So you'll have just a simple little GUI tool, but it replaces, in a sense, Whois, although it does. There's no resolution yet to how this stuff would work with Whois. Mm-hmm. So it won't tell you my address or telephone number or my dog or anything like that, but it will formally identify in a very cryptographically formal sense that address allocation. Will just be a simple tool like Whois. Next, they'll be able to use that when somebody comes to them and says, route this space. Next, when they want to debug somebody saying space is hijacked, they'll be able to use a tool like that. Next, if they're programmatically generating routing filters from the routing registry, which we know to be a weak source of data, they will be able to apply formal testing to those weak data. 3 to 5 years out, the routers will support it all for them. Does that kind of answer where you were heading? Running out of time? Sorry?
Thanks, Randy. I think there might be time for more questions a little later, but right now I'd like to move on to the presentation, which was originally done by Jeff Houston in Montreal about a trial that APNIC has been doing of some of this PKI stuff. Thanks, Gerard.
I'm trying to do something tricky, so I just need a moment to set up. Hello, everybody. I'm Gerard Ross from APNIC. Before I get going, I'd just like to say it's great to be here. It's my first AFRINIC meeting and my first time in Africa, so I'm enjoying this part of it. I'm here on late notice, so I haven't been able to organise this presentation quite as well as I would have. And in fact, I'm not actually even hipper. Some background. I'll just grab the piece of paper I had a moment ago. This presentation, as Randy mentioned, was given in Montreal. There was a very good panel discussion at the ARIN meeting there talking about these issues. Jeff was on that panel presenting about the APNIC trial. Randy also gave that presentation about our problems with protocol. He said that one of the things he explained was that
for 61.0.0.0 in a year and a half. No one actually owns 61.0.0.0/8, do they? We're actually doing allocations from. So why are you seeing it in the routing table? If you have a look at the lightning talks at Nanog 35, there's some brilliant piece of detective work by Nick Feemster in matching spam sourced from the vacant addresses in 61/8. It's lying in the routing system. So what's the problem here? As Steve said, there are many ways to lie in routing. And what really happens out there is that our current mechanisms of BOGON filters and routing policy databases and IRRs are about the best example I could possibly give you of what Bruce Schneier describes as security pantomime. It's the appearance of trying to do something without the substance. It might make you feel good, but it doesn't actually get close to what the problem is. They're not robust forms of defence. What we're trying to understand here in APNIC is our business's uniqueness and validity help you. Because quite frankly, if you're in the ISP world and you get routing requests, please route this address, you have to do data mining. Across who is data? It's a very fuzzy match. The better you are at it, the more expensive you are. It costs your business to have you doing this. Now, if you're getting, about $2 a month margin on that particular customer, how many hundreds of dollars are you going to spend to validate that routing request? The pragmatic answer is that as an industry, we're not equipped to do that kind of expensive data mining. So these very basic questions need to be answered in a manner that is better than what we're currently doing. Is 61/8 valid? No. Who injected this prefix? Go look. Did they have the credentials? Evidently not. And that's the kinds of questions you need to ask every time. And sometimes they are remarkably difficult questions to answer just by data mining. So the motivation we had in APNIC in looking at this is, can we provide you, the industry, with tools and techniques that would allow these questions to be answered automatically? Request and validate that signature against resource holdings. So what do we do? Can it be routed? Is it actually out there? Is the person claiming to originate that, the origin AS, authentic? But importantly, it might be my address, and you might have a good AS, but I have never told you to route it. So can you actually uncover that explicit authority from the address to the AS to actually punch it into the routing system? Really, if we could do this through digital certificates without spending... Identity certificates were normally all about who I am. It's into a trial. The trial is actually... You can introduce pointers to repositories, and we're looking at, in particular, the authority information access location, the subject information access location, and the CRL distribution points, to allow someone who wants to operate their certificates in their repository to be linked into the system. All of that is signed with your public key info signed by the APNIC key. So this is a certificate signed by APNIC. What are we certifying? I think the blandest statement, or the most crisp statement I can do, is APNIC is certifying that the certificate subject, whose public key is contained in the certificate, that's all we're saying, whoever owns that matching private key, is the current controller of that intention. So we're not saying who you are, or that your intentions, good or evil, whatever they may be. We're simply saying that whoever owns that private key is the current holder of those resources. What can you do? You can start talking to other folks saying, if I sign this routing request, it's really me and it really refers to addresses that I control. So you can sign routing authorities, or you can even submit stuff into internet routing registries with your private key signature on this. Sign it. The recipient can validate. All of a sudden, you're talking about validatable trust here. The matching certificate's public key works and you can then validate this. Or you could actually sign routing information that can be propagated in a routing protocol. And if you've looked at things like SBGP, SOBGP, PSBGP, and so on, there are various proposals flying around to actually use this as part of the protocol payload carried around in routing. And of course, given that sort of structure of the hierarchy of delegation, and there are LIRs that do further allocations, you can issue signed certificates, subordinate certificates, for further delegation. So the trial, we have issued a dummy 3779 compliance certificates that reflect all of the APNIC membership holdings. So it's trying to say right up front that even though the CA bid is set on, even though you can issue subordinate certificates, if you issue subordinate certificates for other than allocated resources, the CPS says don't trust them. Don't look at them. They make no sense. The practice statement says this is all about IP resources. We're looking at the mechanisms for the certificate repository and how to gather certificates together to validate them, and also the issues around revocation. And also now working on developing open source tools, and they will be open source, about the kinds of things you need to do in order to work with certificates. Current status, you'll actually find that the URL down there is Trial Certificate Repository. This is the more unique form of certificate repository. You'll also look hard and you'll find the private keys in there as well. Why? This is not normal practice, but if you want to play with these, then there's enough information to play to your heart's content. If you try and use them in any other context, beware. They're not intended for that kind of use. But they are intended to help you look at these and start developing tools and techniques. So you'll find in that repository a key pair generation, all of the holdings, and even an explicit reissuing, so there is a revocation list as well. The tools that we're working on, finally. There is a fair deal of tool work because, quite frankly, in this kind of area, we haven't had a lot of experience as an industry in dealing with resource certificates. So we are looking at generating and actually creating open source tools to bootstrap this up. If you want to validate certificates and you want to do it quickly, you may need most of the certificates nearby. They're not actually very big, but you're going to have to synchronize with external repositories. So that tool that wanders and validates, we will be looking at open source tools to assist. So the synchronized repository tools, the tools around validating certificates or routing authorities or other signed objects. How to generate a routing request or a routing authority, tools to actually do that, enter the private passphrase, generate the block. How to generate subordinate certificates and actually do, if you will, signed, certified sub-allocations. And of course the issue around revocation of these subordinate certificates. And of course, as always, how to update certificate revocation lists and how to manage them. Those tools are being developed now. The current timeline for this work is we would like to get most of these tools in place in the trial across this calendar year. So APNIC is certainly well underway to try and push this forward, if you will, as a real trial that you can actually use and work with across this year. I think that's about where I've got to. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry for the slightly weird nature of this presentation. I hope you all heard it okay. The archive of the whole panel discussion from that ARIN meeting is available on the ARIN website. I also have a full copy of that, plus all the presentations that were given, and a transcript of that on a memory stick, and I'm happy to let anybody download that from there in the break, if anybody wants to get a hold of that. And certainly if you're interested in this subject, I do recommend going to that. There was a pretty active discussion that went on after the presentations for about another half hour, which dealt with quite a few concerns and clarified a few issues that the ARIN community had. And it is very worthwhile going through that, I think. I'm here more as a communications person than a technical person, so if there are any more questions, I'll probably shout out to Mr. Bush down the back. He's normally quite shy, but I think we can lure him out for this if anybody has anything.
Here, John de Groot, on vacation. this mechanism is used to certify the origin of the announcement. What keeps me as a hacker from shortening the AS path and in that way basically spoofing getting traffic towards me and then still doing the SMTP 25 thing and everything else? It's only the origin that you are trying to protect.
False. Hello? This stuff certifies the allocation and the ownership. This is needed to be able to use techniques such as SBGP to provide a formally verifiable path. But the registries are not in the business of certifying routing, only allocation. So what is discussed here in both these talks is the allocation and the use of the certificate to say who may originate it. And from there, the routing protocol has to take over, as in SBGP, and encapsulate forward path. I do have a slide deck on that, if everyone is not sufficiently bored already.
I actually have a second question, Randy, if I may. So we are basically building a central central piece of information that is used to run the whole internet. In the past, there was strong resistance against a single piece because, you know, if something happens to the database, people were screwed. We know all about route reflectors and all that kind of fun.
Two things. This is not central. It may be distributed. It will come certainly in a minimal of five pieces for the five RIRs, but this is actually designed to decompose so that large ISPs can have their own chunks just as they do today in the Internet Routing Registry. Secondly, unlike the Internet Routing Registry and the WHOIS data, these data are formally verifiable. The database itself is self-consistent. You can start at the top of it, go down, and anything you don't traverse, throw away. And in fact, what is part of the toolkit that is being built is to copy a piece of it over. And part of that copy operation is not to just copy the whole chunk, but to look at the pieces and see that they are formally verifiable and copy them in atomically. So the nice thing about the certificate structure as opposed to the WHOIS or the IRR structure, if they differ, they do in some regions, not in others, is that the data are formally cryptographically connected. So you can do a traversal and come up with the formal correct set. Want to go for three? I, by the way, think this is the first. I'm Steve Belevin in a paper in 1986 said that essentially the internet was vulnerable in two major areas, the DNS and routing. This is the first. The DNSSEC is a swamp that you've seen for 12 years or 13 years and still no progress or no significant progress for deployment. This stuff actually looks like it's deployable operationally and will be usable. But, of course, the proof will be when it is. Alan, you were making wiggling noises.
Do you envisage specialized certification authority?
Who are you?
My name is Alan Levine. I come from Cape Town.
What's there?
There's a big mountain. Do you envisage specialized certification authorities in the future for this type of effort, or the RIR?
Quite the opposite, because the RIR is not certifying, much to the CIA's disappointment, that it is allocating it to Randy Bush. It is only saying that it is allocating it to whoever can produce the matching private key. This is not about identity. This is specifically not about identity. In fact, we're having an argument in email right now as we talk, as this has been going on with Jeff and the gang, is that a large number of us say, we don't even want the certificate to have as its subject name, you know, Alan Tixa, to go back in history, or Alan Barrett. It will have some generated hexadecimal garbage, just so that people don't think it's an identity.
We are not proposing to certify identity. Only, it's like a, I don't know if you have them in this culture, but we have a system, oh, like the deposit box in some hotels. You have a key and they have a key. When both keys are produced, you can get what's inside. So all I am is a key holder. The fact that I hold one of those two keys doesn't say that my name's Randy Bush or Dick Cheney. Being Randy Bush is bad enough these years.
Yeah, it's a question derived from the previous question, but...
Who are you, Adiel?
Adiel Aplog, I'm from Africa. But is it exclusive, or does any area can combine, I mean, the identity certificate with the resource certificate, meaning that we have other business we have with our member, and we want to combine instead of having an identity certificate, which would be...
No. That is, when you do business with that member, when you sign a contract with Alan today, and Alan is a member, are you certifying that Alan is Alan, that Alan is Tixa? No, transfers a wire's money into your account and tells you what post office box to ship things to, right?
Mm-hmm.
So your contract is merely a contract of his signature on the contract, and when you want to do business again, can he reproduce that signature? Similarly, cryptographically, you will issue him a certificate in the name ABC4239, he will have created the actual process is he will request a certificate from you. He will sign that, he will generate a private public key pair, sign the request with his private key, and in it have the public key. You will issue him a certificate encapsulating that public key and signing it with your private key. This says the RIR said that whoever can send messages which are decodable with this private key is who I'm doing business with and who I'm allocating space to. So that certificate essentially validates with your signature the private public key pair that Alan has. It doesn't say he's Alan. It just says you're doing business with him. So what's interesting is that he can reproduce it, that he can pull that key to the safe out of his pocket, and combined with your key, it opens the safe. It doesn't say who he is. All it says is he has that key.
Yeah, can I just add to that a little? The fact that I have this key kind of proves that I'm this, that I probably had the same key yesterday and last year. So, you know, I enter into a relationship where we exchange keys and I get a certificate. Later on, the fact that I have the same key is not proof, but strong evidence that it's still the same organization or the same person, or that there's been some kind of authorized transfer of authority.
Okay, this Brian Longwe. I come from a town where there's a street called K Street. I can understand this solution in the context of a situation where you have lots and lots of routing requests coming in and there's a need for validation, etc. But I would imagine, you know, in the case of most African countries, the tendency has been pick up the phone if there's a question regarding a request. Because the community is small, the number of operators are on the decline. In fact, we're fighting to protect the survival of ISPs being overtaken by the mobile operators. So we have to look at this probably in the context of a changing environment where in the future we're expecting to see fewer service providers in terms of network operators who are peering. In that context, I would imagine, yes, this is really something relevant because you're talking about a carrier that is handling a significant number of peering sessions and lots of requests coming in from different sources. But I think I kind of echo Alan's earlier question in terms of, from an African perspective, how closely should we follow this in terms of the immediate or medium-term implications upon our network operations?
I don't think ADL statistics from the registry nor ALAINA statistics back up your intuitive belief that there are less ISPs, and also my intuitive belief, because there are more AS numbers being routed than there were last year. The Africa is not, in the internet topology, an island. It may be in geography, although some of it's pretty thin rivers, but the Suez Canal has made it an island. But it's not that way in the internet topology. It is part of the global internet. African ISPs are going to want to know that the prefix that Gerard announces in Melbourne, Australia, is formally certified. And Gerard, when he hears an African prefix, is going to want to know if it's formally certified. And 5 years from now, if it isn't, he's not going to listen to it. So no continent is an island in the internet. We're part of the global internet. African packets are just like every other packet.
What are you suggesting?
I'm suggesting that the problem is not unique to the north. The need is here too. You want your packet to make it north in 5 years, or you want it to make it to Latin America or to Asia in 5 years, then they're going to want to certify the origin and the AS path of that packet.
Okay.
So therefore, putting this infrastructure, this administrative infrastructure in your RIR is something you should be starting. You know, thankfully for many of us, APNIC and now RIPE and probably soon Aaron are taking very active roles in developing the infrastructure and putting the big cost out, right? You don't have to do anything this week. But organize yourselves. Think of the registry as having to do this in a year. In a year, that software is going to be out there.
Sorry, I think what we're trying to sort of get to is how big, oh yes, Brian from Nairobi, is this potentially as big as the transition into CIDR in terms
it's
of the implications,
no.
In terms of the implications on routing?
No.
It not sounds like in 5 years we may not be able to get our prefixes heard if we don't have this, if we don't have compliance, so to speak. Is that something that you envision as a
no,
distinct
CIDR was
reality?
An actual transition.
Yeah.
This is not. This is just evolution. This is just more administrative stuff. It's also, there will be a transition when it goes into routing in that there will be routers that start rolling this verification directly into the router and routing protocol generation. But it's not going to be a transition like CIDR was.
Mark Elkin, South Africa. Does this mean that certificates or allocations can then be revoked by those who, first of all, did the allocations? And therefore, if everything's working sort of automatically in a few 5 years from now, you'd forget to pay and your roots will automatically disappear out from the internet?
This is something that, as I represented the ISP view in these discussions, this is something that greatly concerned me. And this is an intersection across those things which were allocated by the registry and those of us who have legacy prefixes, those things that we've had since before there were RIRs. When you join the registry and get data from it, get allocations from it, you've essentially agreed to a contract, and that contract has a period, and I bet you darned well that it says in there you've got that prefix as long as you pay the blood money. So the certificate will, the certificate of the allocation, the 3779 certificate, will say what is allocated, and it does have a start date and an end date. That end date is a matter of policy in the registry. It's something I bet you a year from now you're discussing right here or tomorrow, which is how much more than the end of the contract and the cushion are you going to do, right? But it's an issue. It's also an issue in routing protocol design that what do I do when I see address space being announced by Philip that the certificate is expired on, and there is no newer certificate in the database. In other words, it doesn't look like it's been assigned to anybody else. So do I trust that more than an announcement for which there is no certificate at all? That's a matter of, I bet you that's going to be a knob in your Juniper router someday. I hope you will. Mohammed.
Thank you, Randy. Mohammed Diop from Senegal. If you want to have a parallel in terms of vision on what's going to be the impact of certificates on the how to make reliable the routing infrastructure, I think that we can make a parallel with the DNSSEC effort that people are doing in order to make also the DNS infrastructure much more reliable. And what I really guess is in terms of authority, because people are trying to set up private PKI in different countries and trying to get things, I mean, get some reliance at a national level. What's going to happen if we just try to get out from a country? Are we going to accept some authority outside as a legal authoritative server that everybody going to trust, or is
that's
it some?
That's the death of DNSSEC. The NSSEC was designed by good cryptographers with no deployment experience in anything. So it requires a root key from the IANA and procedures to deal with the rolling over of that key when it changes and the distribution of that to the world. Otherwise, we all must do the same for 256 to 254 ccTLDs and 20-odd gTLDs to have as the trust anchor. That doesn't work. 260 trust anchors just doesn't work. You can't distribute and manage that. So you have to solve the one root key at the IANA, and that has been that was not designed into the protocol, and that's been killing DNSSEC for 5 years. And there is still no path out of that. This, on the other hand, instead of going from one root key to 260, is five root keys. They can also use a technique known as, oops, I'm going to get the name wrong, but, you know, they cross-certify each other so that a signature of 3 out of 5 is these kinds of techniques. So the actual deployability of this is driving it, not the theory. So that's why I say the bad news we've experienced with DNSSEC, which I hope will be solved,
is not going to happen here. So you're not going to have to deal with, you know, email messages from RIPE saying, trust these 35 keys, which we see in the DNSSEC testing world.
Alan from Cape Town. Alan Levine from Cape Town, sorry. You raised the point that you didn't answer, and that was about legacy address space. You're quite specific about five certificate authorities, and I don't mean certificate as an
Understand. That's almost entirely a political issue that the registry's members are going to have to decide. In other words, currently what happened was the legacy allocations have been kind of given to each of the registries as to where the best Whois data says those people are, right? And that's old data that's very hard to validate, and everybody's got their little projects going to try to validate. Good luck. So you could decide in the AFRINIC region that we're just going to support those people for $100 a year. They pay $100 a year, we'll give them certificates, da-da-da. You could decide that, you know, they must become full members and pay for it all, and da-da-da, and I'm sure lawyers will get involved. The holders of legacy address space, especially since many of them are universities, could get together and form a sixth registry. The IANA could decide to do it for them. The NRO, but all these are political, social questions and of business decisions, etc. This technology will handle you trivially. But not an easy problem. But it's not an easy business, social, contractual problem. It's an easy technical problem, as many things are in this world.
Thanks, Randy. If we have no more questions about that subject, we can move on to the open mic, which is available to discuss anything of interest to the people here. Yes, Mohammed.
Randy, I recall again the knowledge need on the certificate subject, and I really appreciate the fact that we organized during this AFNOG session on it. I think that everything related to the security and the stability of that environment should be a great focus, and I think that get a specific session on how to help ISP get a better knowledge on the certificate and PKI infrastructure will be a very good thing to include in the next coming session. It might be AFNOG or AFRINIC, but I think that is something that needs to be developed.
Okay. I'm the Tutala from Angola Telecom, from Angola. Okay. I was checking the address that was put here to see the allocation of IP addresses of AFRINIC's website, and I could find that using Windows, one cannot see what is there stated. For example, if you see the table with addresses allocated to a country, you cannot see. By using Linux, it's perfect. Okay, so I think that you must take into account this. Okay.
Have you ever seen a website that's the other way around?
Okay, if you use 196.201.83.159. Yeah.
Alan, are you here? Can you speak about that?
I think it's as Alain said this morning, it's a trial project. It's not something completely done. So I think if you have comment on that, you can direct them directly to Alain, or you can talk to him there. We will put a more elaborate website online so where we can collect more information about that.
Okay, thank you. It is me? Okay. Merci. Je voudrais bien sûr féliciter toutes les belles présentations qu'on a eues. Et rebondissant sur les deux présentations qu'on a eues sur les infrastructures à clé publique, je voudrais informer les participants à cette rencontre qu'au mois de juin 2005, le premier forum PKI Afrique a été organisé à Tunis par l'Agence nationale de certification électronique de la Tunisie. Coopération avec la francophonie et la Commission économique pour l'Afrique. Le secrétariat du réseau est basé à Tunis, à l'Agence nationale de certification électronique. Et il y aura en principe, disons, une rencontre cette année pour poursuivre le renforcement de capacités comme cela a été commencé à Tunis, avec la participation des réseaux PKI d'Asie, d'Amérique et d'Europe qui sont venus apporter leur expérience aux Africains qui étaient présents là-bas à Tunis. Donc, au nom des membres de ce réseau émergent, je voudrais donc appeler à ce que s'il y a des initiatives dans ce domaine, que nous puissions nous concerter au niveau africain, comme on l'a fait aussi, comme cela a été souligné hier à plusieurs reprises. Merci.
Okay, thank you. I don't know who I am, but I come from the IPv6 space, and I only accept IPv6 prefixes. I am Jordi from Spain. I would like to comment something. When we had on Saturday the IPv6 workshop, at the end of the workshop we asked how many people is going to get the prefix, and actually the question was more who is not going to get the prefix. I have been working the last couple of days with already some people, and some of them already filled the template for the prefix request. But we had something like 50 people on Saturday, and we are missing probably about 40 people still with the request. So I don't know if some of these people is still here. I would like to again offer my help, if necessary, to fill in the template, and we have still tomorrow to review it and make sure that we can move on quickly. That's it. Thank you. Right. If there are no more questions or comments, I think we'll close early. A question at the back there.
This works?
Yes.
Okay. So, I'm Gaurav, as I said. I was actually supposed to do a presentation here today, which I didn't do. Afrinic started allocating from the 41/8 prefix sometime last year, and quite a lot of people have been complaining to Afrinic that a lot of internet is not accessible from that particular prefix. So, I talked with Ernest and Ariel yesterday, and we have been running tests with the help of Nisal Govardhan from IS in South Africa, and we have failed to see any problems with the prefix that we are using for testing. So if you are one of the people or one of the LIRs of Afrinic who have been allocated space from 41/8, please come and talk to me. We are happy to see what is causing the problems for you. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Then I think we'll end now. And I'd just like to remind you about two things. Tomorrow we start again in the same place, starting at 9 a.m. And this evening there's a social event. The buses will leave the hotel at 7 p.m. I believe that vegetarian food can be arranged at the venue. although it is specializes in meat, and it's not just food. There will also be entertainment at the social event. Adele tells me that it'll be very good. Okay, thanks.
So tomorrow we will reconvene here at 9, and the day will be essentially on update on Afrinic's more in-depth update on Afrinic activities, and in the afternoon we'll have the AGM. If some member or proxy are in the room, they don't get their pack yet, they have to go to the registration desk to collect their pack. It's very important to collect the pack because you have the ballot inside the pack. If you don't get your pack, you cannot vote. So, yeah, the social event will be great, but we have to come here tomorrow also at 9. So we have more time to refresh ourselves and be ready for 7. Thank you for your attention, and see you downstairs. Thanks.